That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
ThatGreatBusinessShow.com is brought to you by DeFacto Shaving Oil, the best anyone can get. Made in Ireland, sold worldwide.
Welcome to episode 105 of That Great Business Show, posting on the 16th of September 2022. I am Conal O'Moran. We're still feeling the love for episode 103, co-hosted by Professor Martin Curley and his team that is transforming the HSE from 80th in the world to first in Europe via digital health. All of the solutions mentioned on the podcast are homegrown and are being exported by those great Irish companies to the world. I've already linked them to our great friends in Advanced CT in Connecticut, the location of choice for Irish companies heading for the States. I also sent it on to Conor McEnroy, Ireland's man in Paraguay, who joined us for the most bizarre business story ever on episode 15. If you have not heard the Conor McEnroy story, it is well worth a listen. Episode 15, do share it, please. Now, shortly we are going to go to Laois to hear how the Chamber of Commerce has solved problems with mobile phone black spots that were hampering member businesses. The solution came from a local company with big international connections. And stay tuned, because rural or urban, it can work for you too. Team GBS, that's you, our loyal listeners, hate wasters. In this case, we're talking food waste. If you're in the food business, we'll tell you how you might be able to add just shy of 8% to your gross profits. Now, that should perk up your ears. And the debate continues. Office, not office, one day, 2 days, 3 days. As Team GBS regular Donald Byrne of Big Red Barn says, we don't do problems, we do solutions. And your favourite business podcast may have some answers. And as always, all our great tips and insights are brought to you by that great Irish company, DeFacto Shaving Oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. They're always on the lookout for high-energy salespeople serving the grooming market anywhere on the globe. And if that's you, or you know someone that it could be, get in touch with Tom Murphy. That's tom@pamex.ie. And that's where you'll find him. tom@pamex.ie.
That Great Business Show Irish Podcast Awards 2022. Best Business Podcast nominee. DeFacto Shaving Oil. Smooth as.
So, let us start episode 105. With that problem besetting thousands of companies, managers want staff in the office as they believe better work is done better by being in person. However, employees are voting with their feet, choosing not to join businesses that won't allow at least a couple of days working from home, as those employees believe they work better in a non-distracting environment. If people do work from home, there's another problem for employers. By law, they have to assess the employee's work environment. And a company called Capella contacted us to tell us that they did that working from home assessment for a business with 320 staff, all done and dusted in just 2 weeks. And that is a lot in a little. The Wonder Woman behind Capella is CEO Creanna Turley, and she joins me now. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Creanna Turley.
Thanks for having me, Conal. It's great to be here.
Now, I know you want to start from A and go to Z, but you've got to tell me, how in the name of did you assess 320, I presume, individuals' apartments or homes or whatever in 2 weeks?
So we have a technology solution. So we use AI technology and sentiment analysis to carry out automated assessments. People can do it whenever they want. They can do it from their own home. And the automated assessment is created. So if we launch, we can launch. We've done companies of over 1,000 employees. Launch them 6 days later, we have it all done. And then one of our health and safety teams step in and they'll do a kind of a review to make sure what the computers are picking up are correct. You'll always notice that a human eye will see something that a computer won't, just from experience when it comes to health and safety. So, very simple for us to do. Very complicated if you try to do it yourself.
Well, complicated might be a short word. It's practically impossible. You could not go into 320 unless you had an army of people, and that's not happening.
No, you can't, and this is the challenge. You have to do it by law, but how do you do it? And that's something that companies have been struggling with.
Are you using the camera on a laptop or something for, you know, Mary is sitting at home and she can scoot around and show you how and where she's sitting?
So they can follow a QR code and they can upload images of their working environment. And then that all comes together with a kind of a self-assessment in the report. And the employer gets a dashboard with any high-risk cases, next steps, all of that sort of stuff. So it's seamless. It's a really simple process and it deals with the liability.
And Capella is the name. And why is Capella the name?
Ah, so like every good business, that name was decided with a group of friends at the kitchen table and a bottle or two of red wine.
My favourite way of choosing a name.
Yeah, so it's Capella is one of the brightest stars. So that's what we were hoping for when we started the business. And it's also singing solo. So this was the first time in my career. It wasn't my first startup, but it was my first startup where I was in charge. And I had ownership with my co-founder, Victoria Yannikos, who's based in Manhattan. And we decided to build a global business. And that's what we're doing. We're singing solo.
I love it. You're sitting here and saying, I'm going to build a global business.
That's it.
Because you can.
Because we can. And it's so easy now. There's never been a better time. We talk every day for free on Teams or Zoom. And it's like we're in the room together. It's awesome.
And how did you, because I know you want to tell me the A to Z. Start at A and we might get to B and then we'll run out of time.
I suppose my story and Capella's story follows a kind of chronological order. My background was in workplace design, very much from an employee engagement point of view. So before COVID, we were specialists in designing beautiful workspaces and making sure that employees felt engaged in them and getting the best of both worlds. And then when COVID hit, obviously those budgets died overnight and we had to start thinking very quickly. So we took all of our learnings and experience and we put it into technology. And we set ourselves up as consultants with Enterprise Ireland and IDA customers so that we could talk to real people about the real pain points. And very quickly it came out that these risk assessments were a huge issue. Not always just from the liability point of view, but also from productivity. You know, people suddenly landed at their kitchen table and whatever happened, happened beyond that. But there was a big kind of up and down in terms of productivity, in terms of people being okay. You should see what we saw over the last couple of years.
Tell me, can't wait.
We saw people working in their cars. If the husband and wife were in the house and the kids, the husband went out to the passenger seat of the car and worked there for 8 hours a day. We saw utility rooms.
That's tough.
Utility rooms. I saw a wardrobe. I saw someone working in a wardrobe once. And I'm not making light of it. These were people.
I'm sorry, I'm smiling. Because, it is tough. I mean, that's beyond tough.
It's brutal. Yeah, it's brutal. And what we saw a lot of was younger people working from their beds, house sharing, sleeping in the bed all night.
They've nowhere else to go, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sleeping in the bed all night, getting up in the morning, maybe going down to the kitchen for 20 minutes, back to the bed for the next 8-10 hours, maybe down to watch Guardians of the Galaxy for an hour or two, and then back up to the same bed. And that caused a lot of mental health issues.
I was going to say, not good for the old Cliggan at all.
Yeah. Not at all, but also not good for the body. So you had a lot of issues around that. And I guess we were there working with clients who had an issue around this. And most employers don't want this. They proactively tried to come up with ways that this didn't happen. And one of them was that even in the toughest lockdown, if you can't stand over an employee being safe and healthy working from home, then they need to come back in the office. And these were decisions, practical decisions, that a lot of employers made. And it got a lot of people through what was essentially a once-in-a-lifetime event.
But in my intro there, and I saw you nodding there, that some people are employees don't want to go necessarily back into the office, and employers do want them back in. What are you seeing at the moment?
Yeah, so I mean, this brings me kind of to the next product, which is the
you're here to shout out as much as you want.
Once we got beyond that immediate need for risk assessment, making sure your colleagues are safe and set up well, we developed a platform for hybrid working, and that looks after all the practical tools to managing hybrid working. So yes, a big pain point for our clients was creating that excitement for employees to come back into the office. You know, a lot of employees don't want it.
I saw this on your pitch, talking about the excitement of back into the office. I'm not sure that everybody would think it's very exciting to go back into the office.
Well, do you know what? After spending a lot of time at home, when you go in and you have that human connection, you know, that we're moving from Teams call or Zoom call after call with no breaks, you know, people are exhausted with that kind of thing. You go into the office and you talk about the kids going back to school. You have a coffee. You don't have meeting after meeting. And you're getting that kind of, you're getting collaboration, that buzzword, but you're also getting a collateral kind of knowledge or a collateral understanding, especially for younger people. They're sitting in a room where they're hearing how their colleagues who are maybe more experienced speak to clients, you know, deal with situations. That's very uplifting for someone who's been sitting in an echo chamber in their kitchen. So to try and get some employees back in once or twice, you're going to start seeing them maybe hitting that nirvana of hybrid working, which is working from home 2 or 3 days a week and then in the office likewise.
And what's the exciting thing that brings them into the office for you? What do you organise for them?
Yeah, well, with our platform, we always get an architect to draw up the actual floor plans of the office. So you're looking at, when you want to book in or see who's in, you're looking at your actual office with a really cool graphic. It's not like a Ryanair flight where there's loads of green chairs and you're hoping for the best. And when you go on, you can see actual pictures of the faces of the people who are in today. So you're no longer sitting there going, you know, everyone's at home, I'm at home.
I'm not familiar with this at all.
Sure, sure.
So tell me, I'm Connell, obviously, and I am to go into Smith's because that's where I work. Yeah. And is it at 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. or something, I dial in and I see, oh, geez, you won't crane us in, I'm not going in? Or
hopefully not. What you do is we have a desk booking platform, okay? Mm-hmm. So you will have a look at the office floor plan for today, tomorrow, the next day. And you'll see my little face over a chair on the floor plan, and you'll know that I'm going to be in. Now, you can either take that as a sign to avoid, or you can say, Krina's in. Actually, I want to catch her. I'm going to pop in that day. Or a manager can see that different people are in and can plan to have a catch-up with staff, a face-to-face, again, that human contact.
And how far ahead is that planned?
Oh, as long as you like. Different companies would have different needs. So as long as you like, you can book 2 months in advance and people can plan. And you can also create events. So we can push out, you know, the summer barbecue is happening in September and you can push that out to all employees so they can see it and they can book in for that as well.
So since you are on top of this in mm-hmm. this country at the moment, mm-hmm. but going worldwide, what are you seeing? Are we going to go back to the office full time, do you think?
No, that genie is not going back into the bottle.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. And I suppose we've done an awful lot of research we've commissioned a lot of research on this. So you read a lot of reports and you see differing statistics, but the bottom line is people want hybrid working. The companies who are rejecting hybrid working are no growth companies or very little growth companies. The ones who are getting this right are really reaping the rewards.
So the ideal, 2 days, 3 days?
I would say personally, the most common we're seeing is 3 days at home, 2 days in the office, or vice versa, depending on industry. You know, if you're dealing with a creative design house, their patterns of working are going to be different to a law firm or a large accountancy firm. And I suppose that's one of the messages I have. There isn't a one size fits all. This is something that will take some figuring out. And we haven't come across anyone who has absolutely nailed this yet because it's an iterative process. And the key is to explain that to staff and communicate and treat people as adults, absolutely, but also to put some structure around it, you know?
Well, that's 2 or 3 days at home or wherever at the moment.
Yeah.
Look down 2-3 years' time. Will that change? No?
It's very much employee driven at the moment. So if the employer doesn't deal with this properly and plan it and create that excitement and create that environment that gives collaboration and gives a positive experience, then it probably won't change. But if you have this fabulous workspace, this space where people can escape to, it could be more days in the office.
That's back to your roots. You just love a nicely planned office.
I love a workspace that delivers, you know, all sorts of environments. So if you want to go in for some focused work, you can go in for focused work. If you want to go in for the social element, you can go in for that. And our platform would very much reflect that. So we give you heat maps of the office. So you can, as an employee, you can decide whether you're going in on a busy day or a quiet day.
I love those heat maps. Yeah. I see them on those programs about, you know, property programs where they show you how little you actually do use some rooms.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
You pay an extra, I don't know, 50,000 quid to buy an extra room that you never use.
Well, this is brilliant that you brought this up because this is where our platform really adds value. So yes, it's the day-to-day tools for the employees, but it's the insights that the data we collect give to the employer or the C-suite or the stakeholders that's really interesting. So if you see that your meeting rooms that you can book on our platform are busy 80% of the time and that your desks are occupied 20% of the time, you can make a decision about more breakout spaces, and that's how your employees want to use that workplace. So you can make decisions like that into the future, and there's an awful lot of data like that that helps employers decide how hybrid working is going to work for them.
There's a billion, maybe a multi-billion dollar question that we're sitting out there looking at us all of those massive big offices that were about to be full of happy little workers. Do you think, will that all just die on the vine, never be occupied, or the future of those behemoth buildings full of workers, thousands and thousands?
No, I don't think so. I think that they're going to be used in a different way. You know, there won't necessarily, a lot of places have gone hot desking rather than your own desk. But you're going
Does
to
that
have...
work?
Yeah, it works very well.
Remember Anne O'Leary at Vodafone when she was there explaining that to me and showing me. And I always felt uncomfortable that if I would go in, it's my mess. I want to see my mess. I want to be in my mess. Now, they weren't allowed to have any mess, but I need a mess. It's just me.
Well, then that's just you.
And so you're fired.
And no, not necessarily. Like there's some people like IT, they're probably going to need a desk kept for them. HR might need their desk kept for them. So it's like a balance. It works for some people. It doesn't work for other people. CEOs are very precious about it.
Corner office, top of the building.
So the line I say there is, okay, you have all sorts of confidential documentation that you can't move. So you keep your office and everyone breathes a sigh of relief and it's a more relaxed conversation.
Anne told me, and I don't know whether it's true or not, but she told me that she shared the desks with all her co-workers.
I'm sure it is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine that you're sitting beside the boss. Oh, geez. No, not for me.
Well, that's where our platform would come in. You'd see her face.
And everybody says, I feel a bit of COVID coming on.
And you'd be over the other side of the office.
Nothing against you, Anne. Your international aspirations, please explain.
Yeah, so we set the business up to be international. And I have to say, shout out to Enterprise Ireland. They have been amazing. You know, if you ask Enterprise Ireland to put you in the room with someone, you'll be in the room with them within a week or two. So they're very much behind the journey. We looked initially to the UK, as a lot of Irish companies do. And we certainly have a few clients there. And we tried to launch in the States this summer. And we've kind of slowed down a little bit on that because it's a slightly different value proposition over there. They have different laws around their employees. And we're working really hard on research, on finding the right place to land within the US.
No, you have not, because I'm telling you now, we work with Advanced CT, which is Connecticut.
Yeah.
And they want you. They love you. They
just,
because you're Irish, they want all Irish companies leaving these shores to base themselves in Connecticut. And as I keep saying, the one above New York, below Boston, an hour and a half to either one, and they have offices ready for you.
Perfect.
There's a very, very, very nice man called Tony Sheridan, ex-Meath. He's only been over there for 60 odd years. He is preparing the offices for you as we speak. So there you go. Now, that's where you love.
Thanks a lot.
And what's the aspiration beyond that? I mean, how big can you go?
Oh, we can go huge. So we already have clients across Europe, Portugal, Luxembourg, UK, Ireland, and we have clients in the US as well.
How are you getting those? I know you've got your colleague Victoria.
Yeah.
But in Portugal, how do you find people
in Portugal? Through a partnership, actually. So our model is very much business to business and partnership. So as partners grow, we grow, which is a great way of looking at things. So we partner with a company called Bound Health in Portugal, and we're delivering for them, and it's working very well.
So what can Team GBS, that's our loyal listeners, what can they do for you? What little step up the ladder could they do for you?
They can have a look at our service, and if they think it fits with their organisation, they can give me a call. That would be the most.
Capella.
Capella.
Creona Turley, Capella. Is it expensive?
No, 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 no. It's very cost effective. Honestly, it is. In terms of doing it yourself, it's very cost effective. And then the platform, the savings it delivers will pay for itself. You know, we deal with everything from booking parking, meeting rooms, desks, right across to the collaborative piece that I spoke about. So, yeah, I mean, it really does make sense in terms of return on investment.
Okay, that all sounds very good. We will be backing you. We will look after you. We'll do whatever we can. We'll certainly get you set up in Connecticut. Now, do you know that we have a final question that we ask everybody? Have you been warned of this?
Yes, I have.
Oh, thank God. We ask people who they would hire in a heartbeat. So who would Creona Turley hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, so I gave this a bit of thought, and you know, every business has gaps, has skills gaps and experience gaps. And certainly I've worked with a number of really good strategic mentors over the last couple of years. But I think we've been very lucky with the team. Our CTO, Carlos Rodriguez, is a genius. In my head, he makes fire every day. Our head of onboarding, Neil Felton, is just really, really good at what he does.
How many have you got in total? What's the...
We're coming up to 10 now.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. I must love you.
So, yeah, what I would do is I would clone. I would clone the guys.
That's not allowed. You have to give me a name. Doesn't matter if it was your ballet teacher back 100 years ago. I don't care.
This is what I've prepared, Conor.
Cloning.
Cloning, yeah. Cloning.
I don't think you're going to get away with that.
Oh, why not? No. All right, I'm going to have to come back to you.
Ah,
that's
no.
That's my answer to anything when I'm not ready to commit. Well, can I say my mother?
Of course you can.
Okay, well, I'll say my mother. She was a bit of a pioneer in her day. She was one of the first broadcasters on Irish television and radio.
What was her name?
Margaret O'Brien.
And Margaret O'Brien.
Margaret O'Brien. You're talking it now rings, a good oh, few years
yeah,
ago,
yeah, but she... my dad was involved once upon a
oh,
time
there you go.
Back in there.
But she was a pioneer when it came to working women and
cool.
A very, very hard-working woman. So yeah,
that's
to have her
me.
At my
yeah.
side would really get things done.
And did she actually work in TV?
She did, yeah.
Doing... Links or something like that.
Yeah,
was it?
Yeah. Continuity announcer back in the day.
Fabulous. Oh, I'm a fan already.
There you go.
My big soft spot. Margaret O'Brien, you are hired. Is Margaret still with us?
She's still with us, yeah.
Fantastic.
She'll be my biggest fan and my biggest critic now when she listens to this.
Very good. Margaret, you're definitely hired. Get out of the garden. Come in. Capella needs you. That is Creona Turley, so thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Great Business Show Irish Podcast Awards 2022. Best Business Podcast nominee.
Thinking of travel? If so, make sure to make DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, your choice of travel companion. A 25-milliliter bottle of DeFacto means no hassle at airports, no bulky cans to carry, and the guarantee of the world's best shave. DeFactoShave.com.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with five-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
That great business show.
Here's a did you know to impress your pals with in the pub. Did you know that Ireland generates more than 1 million tons of food waste every year? And that's wrong both commercially, but it's also morally wrong in a world where mass hunger is still rife. A Tuam-based company called DigiTally, spelt, oddly enough, Digi and then Tally, T-A-L-L-Y, says it can help, and in doing so can achieve a pretty impressive 8% growth in gross profits for hospitality companies. And how? Well, who better to ask than DigiTally's boss, Patrick McDermott. Welcome to That Great Business Show, Patrick McDermott.
Thank you, Conal. Delighted to be here, and thank you for having me on your show.
DigiTally, there is a reason for the name.
Yes, we came up with the name through a brainstorming session. Lots of hours of in-depth thought and knowledge went into it. So after lots of crazy suggestions, we decided, well, we do digitize things. And then with the tally, there's an element of counting in what we do, both from a food waste and an inventory perspective. So the mash up of the two of those words made perfect sense.
You are a food nerd. You actually count sandwiches.
Count sandwiches, food, amongst other things, yes.
Peanuts.
Yes.
Pieces of lettuce. Anything that comes your way.
Yeah, without making it overly in-depth and where this all came from, I didn't wake up one day and then decided, oh, here's a great idea, I'll decide to start counting things. It's really a sector, an industry that I fell into. I was working on cruise ships at the time for 5 years overseas, and then I came to Galway for the weekend. That was 18 years ago. And then I started up with a friend of mine in an inventory control business where we worked with hospitality businesses, food businesses, to count their stock.
Ah, come on. You didn't sit down with your pal who is called
Arthur Leonovitz.
I knew there was a
DigiTally,
yeah. You didn't sit down in a boozer or wherever with him and said, listen, I was just thinking of doing a tallying business for food.
No, there was no cocktail moment, cocktail napkin moment or business plan that we hear of so often. It was myself and Arthur working together for the last 10 years in my other business, stocktaking.ie, which is the service business, which works with retail. So, because when you think of counting, you think of two things. Either one is scanning barcodes, or number two is writing things down and then putting it into an Excel spreadsheet. So with the first is okay, because scanning barcodes is fairly easy, but chicken fillets and heads of lettuce don't have barcodes. So as a result, the chosen method is manually writing it down. So we said there's an opportunity for us here to be able to digitize that process. And by digitizing it means it immediately saves hours, it reduces errors, and it protects the integrity of what's being counted, which means then your margins are a lot more accurate. And it means that owners can then see all of their sites on one dashboard and quickly go in and drill down. Where's the problem? What do I need to do? How do I address it?
A gross profit increase of 8%. That, without question, would have pricked up ears of all listeners. That's a chunk.
Yes, and that's that was one of the better case studies. There's a minimum of 1%. We'd be disappointed with that. And primarily because they're doing things in a more efficient way. Because one of the biggest challenges that we have, and especially now with a lot of our customers, hospitality businesses, what they were faced with over the last number of, in the last 30 months, they've been closed for about 24 of them. So the last 6 months now has been, let's make some money. So as a result, they've been caught up a bit in the whirlwind of day-to-day business. So what we've done is we're preparing ourselves now for the next 6 and 12 months by laying a lot of groundwork when it comes to marketing, and then really getting the understanding or the knowledge out there to people that, look, we have a very, very simple to understand solution that will mean they'll be able to incorporate that into their business and immediately reap the benefits.
I presume, as I always do, that somebody else is doing something very similar, if not exactly the same.
You would think. But like with all great business ideas, it comes down to simplicity. You see, every food business has technology in place, but they tend to have 2 to 3 key pieces of technology based around, it could be a POS, a point of sale system like their till. It could be an accountancy system. It could be their, time and attendance. But and all elements of a POS system has stock, in inverted commas, a stock system. But you see, the challenge is when it comes to a time of a stock take, the POS will look after the sale of the recipe. Whereas when it comes to inventory time, it's about the counting and reporting of the ingredients. So not the recipes. There's a distinct distinction between two. So they buy in, they sell lasagna, but they buy in pasta, tomatoes, herbs, and so on. So we look after the counting and reporting of the ingredients.
Doesn't Tara Beattie have something similar? Maybe you don't know Tara. Tara is a Team GBS supporter, and she's been on with me once or twice, and she is brilliant. That she, her system specifically analyzes the costs for restaurants and or for food companies to work out where their margins are coming from and where they can tighten up and where they could maybe make a little extra.
Yes, it's all about managing the margin and trying to get that part right. When it comes to the inventory side, the challenge is very simple. They have to count it frequently. They have to report it efficiently. If they don't, there'll be discrepancies in their margin. So while the production side of things, which is more what you're referring to there, were more about the day-to-day and then helping the chef or the catering assistant reduce the amount of hours. And that we've been very successful and been able to do that.
And have you been successful overseas yet?
Yeah, we started to bring the software to the UK. We have some customers over there at the moment in hospitality.
And how did you break into that?
With great difficulty. Because
but literally, did you make phone calls or did you go into LinkedIn? Or, because you mentioned Cunard, and for those who don't know what or who Cunard is, you should, but that's the QE2 and all the rest, isn't that right?
That's right, the QE2 and the Queen Mary 2, which I had the 5 years working on the ship, so that was a great way to see the world and get paid for it. And where I met my wife as well. So again, all went well. I made the mistake of once saying that's where I met my current wife, but no, it's definitely my wife. With breaking into the UK, you see, I'd been known in Ireland, I'd been known within certain sectors and the food sector, stock control. But when it comes to the UK, nobody knows me or nobody knows the business. So what we said is, right, well, rather than us being not well known everywhere in the UK, let's get very well known in a certain sector or a certain location. So we focused on Liverpool and Manchester, and because between the two of them is just a bit bigger than the size and population of Ireland.
It's mad, isn't
so
it?
That's what we're doing. I mean, it's big. Incredible. The scope, size is incredible. Size is incredible. But we're looking to, because anyone that has a multi-site business, they will have one of their locations in those two cities. And then so we'll be looking to be brought in locally and then rolled out nationally.
And are you going door to door? I'll take a name, Max Smith's. If you go to a Max Smith, do you go to the manager, the floor manager on the day? Do you go to the manager of the operation? Do you go to HQ in London maybe? Where do you start?
Yeah, and again, that's part of the challenge, knowing who is your customer. While the pain might be experienced to the chef, he's not the one that's writing the check. So actually knowing and understanding that, sometimes it's the head of operations, sometimes it could be a head of strategy and innovation, and others it could be the financial controller who may be overseeing the group. So sometimes it's the same, it's a person who wears a different hat in each organization, depending on the organization. So that takes a bit of digging and asking, but it comes down to the basics, call, email.
And I'm coming close to, where do you ask? I'm that close to finding out how to crack this one. Where do you do your digging?
Well, I start off by initially networking. By talking, we teamed up with BITA, BITA, the British and Irish Trading Alliance, where they have chapters in those different sectors. So, for example, they would have either networking evenings or a networking event. Let's say, for example, there's one coming up now in a couple of weeks in Anfield. I'm a red from another city, so look, we won't go there. And so, as a result there, you have other people who are interested in helping other people. When you have that type of an attitude within a business sector, that's really useful, because then it's not Here's a company knocking on your door and you don't have a clue who they are. Here's, will you talk to Patrick? I think this could be a fit. And straight away then that will help.
Okay, that's one great tip. Give me another.
On the ground, people who are already selling to that market.
How are you finding those people? If you're looking for Mary or John Smith, how do you identify them?
Through the networking events that we would have been at previously. So one, there's not one silver bullet. There can be an element of LinkedIn. There can be an element of referrals through your own existing network. And then when you do go to these events, you just have to simply go and ask, do you know this company? Who is it I should speak to? And then when you do get to talk to them, then say, well, look, I know this isn't your thing, but who within the organization should I be talking to? So to keep it really, really simple.
And success to date there?
Success to date, again, we're only really starting in the UK because, as I said, 24 out of the last 30 months, the majority of our customers have been closed. Thankfully, we have some really good customers here in Ireland when it comes to contract catering and also in the deli side of things. The delis is something that we're all familiar with, but delis is becoming a lot more group focused, where you have more and more groups, and as a result, their problems multiply. So for them, each one,
he says with a smile on his face.
At the end of the day, we provide solutions to people who have a problem, because people buy two things: good feelings and solutions to problems. We're very much the painkiller rather than the vitamin when it comes to business problems.
I haven't heard that one before. They buy good feelings.
Good. They either buy one of two things: good feelings or solutions to problems.
Okay, I'm going to park that into my brain.
Remember where you heard it first.
I certainly will on the podcast. So back to the UK. So you've made your first inroads. Okay, early days. And then what? What's the ambition after that?
Again, to get in with single sites that's part of a multi-site setup that would have multiple chain.
So who's your ideal? Give me a name or a chain that you'd
the
just
likes
love
of,
to.
Contract catering firms. Are good because they tend to have scale. They're ones that we are working with currently. And then secondly would be hospitality groups. Some of them can be kind of the same name above every door, and others are, let's say, a management company that may have all different and disjointed technology systems, but yet they need the core data.
We love those ones.
We love those ones because we make it very simple to get information into and out of digitally. Because as a result, then it just means that the uniformity is key. Then the accuracy is better. The margins will naturally increase because for the first time, they'll be getting it all back in the same way. Rather than saying, Mary in site A, well, it's not really her thing, but she's great with people. Whereas in site B, he'll say, my stock ticket, my food waste, it has to be 100% or I'm not going to be happy. So there's two very differences, but they need a system. And that's really where we come in.
And we don't, as you probably know, because you've listened to all the podcasts, haven't you? 105.
Almost. Working my way through it.
You do know that we don't ask the crass questions about how much things cost. But since you're telling me that you can either get people either somewhere between 1 and 8% extra onto their gross profit, does it cost you 1 to 8% to pay digitally for the service? In other words, it's a zero-sum game.
No, we make, because with our model, we're a SaaS business, so it's totally online. So what we do is we bill a flat fee for the customer, which ranges anything from 2,000 to 8,000. So it really does vary depending on what they want, the amount of sites, the amount of potential, the amount of modules within the software that they want. Because some might want the food, the beverage, the waste, a management app. So it really just depends on what they want.
And I am in business myself. And when somebody says 2 to 8,000, I ask per day, per hour, per week, per month, per year.
12 months.
That's
for 12
bad.
Months.
That's
yeah,
okay.
No, it is very reasonable. Very yeah. reasonable.
And how many of you are there in Tuam?
There's seven of us.
That's a nice little business, isn't it?
It's a nice little number. Again, I have the stock-taking business. There's 48 in that, that's tipping along.
I have to ask, and I know you're not here to talk about the stock-taking, but I had somebody on the other day talking about slippage, so-called slippage. You're familiar with that term. Slippage, for those who don't know what that means theft. How much theft is going on anywhere at any time?
Slippage or shrinkage?
Shrinkage.
Shrinkage.
I think it's also, well, maybe it's... Maybe in South Dublin it's called slippage.
I don't know. An insurance person might call it slippage. But that really varies. And again, not to divulge from the question, it's in retail would tend to be up to 1.5%. Within hospitality, what we would consider acceptable would be less than 0.5%. But 1% is an average mark.
That's 1% of total turnover.
1% of total turnover would be unexplained or would be regarded as contributing towards shrinkage.
And typically, is that going out the door in drink form or in fellas taking out sides of beef, or what's the usual way it's going out?
Yeah, and again, it depends on the sector, because if you're in the hardware sector, that could be some of it. Is incorrect accounting in the way that things are done. Some of it is in orders not been stored. In food, it comes to perishable. That when the items are perishable, you're going to have food waste.
Okay.
And then that all comes into the management of what means one key metric is your day's stock in hand. That for a hospitality business, if you have a day's stock in hand of more than 7 days, but yet you have deliveries 5 days a week, then do you really need 7 days? Would 5 be better? It just means that you're turning the stock. When you're turning the stock, you have less waste. Because see, with food waste, it can be categorized, not to go away too much from your question, but with food waste, it's important to note there's 3 different types. That there's plate waste, which is the amount of uneaten food, which accounts for about 38%. Then you have the prep waste, which is anything from the end cuts of onions to the sides of a watermelon, those type of things. That's about 25%. And then the remaining 35% is the prepped food. So food that's been prepped with the idea of it being consumed, but it's not for whatever reason. It could be there was a function going on. And, you know, like in weddings is a great example of that, where you would have the dishes of veg and of potatoes. And if you can break that down into the amount of waste per cover, people will be frightened, because some people...
And that's what we came in to talk about, really. 1 million tonnes a year, just on our little island.
Yeah, and 150,000 tonnes. Yeah, 150,000 tonnes of that would be directly to the food service sector, and they say that 75% of that is avoidable.
How?
How is it avoidable? Portion control, poor recipe management. People have been over generous, and then people then not actually eating the food that's been presented to
people
them.
People being over generous, do discuss. What does that mean? Jeez, I'm not going to your house for a meal.
Well, here's an example. I was talking to a business recently, and what they said is that when I said to them about food waste, and they said, well, I don't really have a problem with food waste. And I said, well, do you have a brown bin? And they said, well, yeah. I said, well, what's that? And then they said, well, we have it empty at the beginning of the week, it's full at the end of the week, someone comes and takes it away. I said, do you realise that you're paying to buy it, then you're paying to bin it, then you're paying to dispose of it, not alone the actual waste in the production of all that food to get it to you in the first place? I said, that's a big problem. And when we quantified the problem, this SME was €25,000 is what that problem was worth of that bin. But he wasn't managing it, he wasn't able to break it down. That's per year.
But that could be stuck into his back pocket.
Yeah.
Wow. If you only had you, it would only cost you 8 to 10,000.
Well, the thing is, you see, there's one thing to manage the waste, but there's another thing then if you can save your labour hours, if you can reduce the food waste and also increase your margins, there's a 3-way benefit there. So it's not just one thing. Because the information that we deal with based on the ingredients, we already have it for the stock control. So might as well use it for the food waste. And then we'd be able to use that data in other ways to turn that information or the data into information. Because Mary in the kitchen, you tell her you have £500 of food waste this week, she'll think, well, that's your problem as the business owner. Whereas if you say, Mary, we have 125 meals was wasted this week, that might resonate with her a little more. Or someone else who might be a bit greener to say, well, that's there's 140 tonnes of carbon, which is the equivalent of flying from, for example, here to New York, just in 1 week that we're responsible for. That's a serious metric that you can then get your staff to be a part of the solution and not just thinking it's just a brown bin.
When you're sitting in a restaurant, I'm just laughing to myself, when you're sitting in a restaurant looking at plates going in and out, are you thinking of the food and the meal, or are you counting, saying, geez, that's about 30% waste there? Oh, I see, yeah, we could do portion control over there. Is that how your mind works?
It's I guess you're constantly aware. You're constantly looking at it. I'd be a big lean thinker to think that, well, is there a better way of doing things? Yeah. And in a lot of cases, there is. But you don't know what you don't know. And sometimes people are experiencing the pain of a problem, but it's just not high enough on their agenda for them to take action. And a great story I heard recently was the story about the dog and the nail. Have you heard about that one?
No.
Well, the guy walking down the road, he hears a dog whimpering. He goes up to the house and he says to the guy sitting on the porch, the dog owner, your dog's whimpering. He sounds like he's in pain. I said, yeah, he is. He's sitting on a nail. Then he said, well, so why doesn't he move? And the dog owner said, well, it's not hurting him enough. So we all have the
okay.
nail.
Okay, like it.
We all have the nail in our business, but is it hurting us enough to actually take action on it?
Get your butt up.
To get your butt up and to start taking a bit of action. Now, again, that's a lighthearted way to look at it. We all have the daily whirlwind of business that's going to be keeping us occupied. There's always reasons not to do something. But if it means you can put money in your back pocket by taking action, that's
simple
really...
Simple action.
Yeah. Simple action. And it has to be simple. Simple, simple, simple.
And a million tons is just wrong. I mean, I said it there, morally wrong. I saw something yesterday about that Kenya, beautiful country if you've ever been there, and it's got a famine. That's wrong. I can't stand that stuff, you know.
If you take that to the UK, what they have a quantified is of that waste, it's 1.3 billion meals.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
Every year.
Every year.
Yeah. And that could feed lots and lots of other people.
Well, see, if food waste was a country,
I know,
it would be the third biggest.
Well, that's huge.
The third biggest. So there'd be China, the US, food waste. India and Russia. That's the way the hierarchy would go. And that's a big concern.
Two, I think, final questions. Probably another three or four as well. But the second and last question that I can think of is, you have ambitions to get into the US of A.
Yes. Yeah, look, the
like
US.
An
well, when we see that with what we have in Ireland and what we've achieved in Ireland, again, it's on a smaller scale. Initially, our focus is on the UK, no doubt about it. We have to become a well-known brand. And
how long will that take?
That will take us 3 years to get the traction that we want. As someone said to me in the agricultural side of things, look, there's a lot of cows to be milked at home first before you start looking to the next field. So we had that attitude with Ireland. We'll have the same with the UK and when it comes to the US. We're good for talking to people when it comes to having conversations about moving that. You had a good suggestion for me prior to us coming in here.
That was the Ireland Connecticut Business Council, and I keep telling everybody in the podcast, if they want to know more about basing yourself in Connecticut, do get in touch directly with me, please.
Absolutely. So again, using relationships like that, the Irish are great for talking, they're great for connecting, because I think there's a natural care or an ability to care about other people and to give them a leg up where possible.
Well, I'd certainly, if you can cure a million tons of food waste just in this country, I'm all for you. You, because you have told me a couple of times now that you've listened to all the podcasts, you know what my final question will be. Who would Patrick McDermott hire in a heartbeat? Did you get the email about the hire in a heartbeat? Just if you didn't, you can look at me and say no.
No, I'm joking. Didn't. Yeah, no, I know. I've listened to it.
A lot of people come in and say, what?
You got me there. No, mine is a bit more different. I would say it's a what and a who. If I was to hire in a heartbeat, the what would be the creation. One thing that impresses me is the selling system that Amazon has. The way that they make it incredibly easy to avail of their service. I love that, being a lean thinker and always looking to eliminate waste.
That's how he made his money, wasn't it? Didn't he have the one click? He invented the one click purchase.
Yeah.
And I think he IP'd it and then nobody else could have a single click.
Yeah, and the rest of the world are cursing the customer ever since.
I think it's gone out of IP now, so I think you can click away. Yeah.
Yeah. So to me, I love that because it's very customer centric. Anything that has the customer in mind that makes life simple, as a business owner, you've got to be all over that. The second then would be a little bit old-fashioned, but would be Brian Tracy. I like the principles that he has when it comes to things like Eat That Frog, when it comes to looking at the person. To me, it's all about helping people. Business is a business. It's bricks and mortar in a lot of cases. But the people who will start to adapt to use our service are people. And to me, there's nothing that gives me a better buzz than talking to someone and them saying, Jesus, digitize. I love it. And then say, I showed it to Mary, and Mary was a technophobe, and geez, she can hardly use a phone, but she loves this. And to me, bingo.
And you also love the 8,000 to 10,000 a year.
10,000 a year? The 10,000?
Euro.
Euro, yeah, there you go. There you go. That's put that, that in your back pocket. Exactly. Put that in your back pocket.
Yeah. Patrick, but, that's a lovely story, and it's coming out of Tuam, where you are employing seven for Digitale, and did you say 38?
48, yeah.
48.
The business stockticking.ie, yeah.
That is brilliant. Yeah. Like, I love these companies that people probably don't know about, they should know about.
There you go. Well, look, we've customers predominantly in retail, strangely enough, where you have convenience stores, supermarkets, and in the likes of Carrick, Dunn, Elvery, Skechers, Shoes, Louis Copeland's, all great businesses that are using an Irish business based out of Tuam. And again, it's all about the team. It's all about people. That's one of our core values in both businesses, all about people.
Patrick McDermott, Digitale, thank you for joining us on That Great Business Show.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you so much for your time. Thank you.
That Great Business Show, Irish Podcast Awards 2022, Best Business Podcast nominee.
Everyday accounting can be a bit of a drama for SMEs. However, BigRentCloud.com takes the drama away with its simple and easy-to-use cloud-based accounting and payroll software designed for SME owners. Raise and send invoices, manage VAT reports and obligations, run management reports, link directly to Irish banks, automatically import purchase invoices, and so much more. All with 5-star customer support. BigRentCloud.com, 100% Irish-owned and a proud member of Team GBS.
Viscosity. When you shave, you want the highest viscosity because it helps the blade run smoother. DeFacto, the world's best shaving oil, has incredible viscosity. That's why DeFacto leaves your face, underarms or legs nick-free. Higher viscosity makes blades last longer. DeFacto is the best for your skin and your pocket. DeFactoShave.com.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
I remember some years ago talking to Bernard Coyle, the man behind the Mr. Crumb bread stuffing brand, about how he managed to stay in business just about because he could not get proper broadband. Genuinely, he used to have to write his emails and then send a staff member down the road, I think to outside the nearest school, where he could just about get a broadband link. It's quite unbelievable, but as I say, quite true. Now, Mr. Crumb seems to be thriving, but for others, black spots, particularly in rural areas, continue to stifle trade and commerce. This is even greater relevance as many people would continue to work from home, at least on a part-time basis. Cellnex is a Spanish-quoted company with a unit in Ireland that can, it says, cure those black spots if only someone, presumably central government, would only give them 10 million euro. They're already on the job in Laois, an area that seems to have a particular problem with those damned black spots. And joining me to discuss these problems and the solution, we love a solution, are Colin Cunningham, Ireland CEO of Cellnex, and Caroline Hoffman, CEO, Chamber of Commerce at Laois. Caroline, I'm going to start with you because it's just an odd little thing that I noticed. I've been doing this podcast for 2 years and I've been doing business broadcasting for many, many, many years before that. Laois never or rarely features on my radar.
I think we're a very modest county and we have a lot of modest business people there that don't, you know, shout loud enough about how much we have to offer. I've been in my role as Chief Executive of the Chamber for the past year and the amazing businesses we have around the county, and they're continuing to grow. And, you know, it's all about location as well. You know, we're less than an hour to Dublin Airport, which is phenomenal. Any other country you go to around the world, you could be an hour and a half, 2 hours travelling to the nearest city.
And then another 4 hours to get through Dublin Airport.
Well, that's slowly changing. I've heard it's improved. But we do have a lot to offer. We have, you know, a really accessible county council in terms of planning and things like that. Excellent business support unit. Local enterprise office. We have so many new and emerging businesses, particularly in the food sector as well.
Will you send them on to us, please?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You'll be surprised what we have in Laois. It's amazing.
I'd love to, because as I say, Carlo is just absolutely booming. We have loads of people coming in from Carlo. And next door, nothing.
We'll have plenty for you, Colin.
Good. Let's talk about the problem. Who wants to talk about the problem?
Well,
Colin.
I think Colin, just to mention, when you say there's a lack of companies maybe being recognised in County Laois, and I think it's interesting because part of our story, part of what we've done over the last couple of years.
This is the Cellnex story.
Yes, we've actually incorporated the companies that are actually based in Laois in making the solution that we've come up with. And in fact, to mention Alpha Wireless as being one of them, they're one of our suppliers. They're an internationally traded business. Like, they're selling their solution worldwide in the telecoms market all over the world. And I think, you know, when we started our business back in 2015, we quickly realized that they had something that could help. And we've been engaged with them for a number of years. And as I said, it's part of, you know, what we've now got as a solution. But I suppose the, you know, you mentioned the 10 million there. The 10 million is an aspiration. We certainly think that if there was some government support, that it would certainly help us with the what we're trying to solve.
But that's another 10 million on top of the broadband plan. So something is not working. So please name that.
Okay. So maybe to separate the two things, our business really is focusing on the wireless sector. So we provide infrastructure to deliver, I suppose, the required infrastructure for mobile telecommunications primarily, right?
And the broadband plan is wire.
Well, it's wire into the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody is using mobile. So, like, I don't think there's anybody in Ireland, children included, that don't have some form of wireless device. I mean, some of the kids today, they have devices on their arm now so that they can be tracked wherever they are. That's a very young age. But, you know, I think when you talk about it in the context of business and in the context of, you know, people working from home, regardless of whether you have broadband in your house, you still need to be able to make a phone call on your mobile phone. It's not like 20 years ago when everybody had the fixed line in their house, and that's what was required. I mean, I remember, I'm not that old, but I do remember a time when the phone box in the village where I grew up was a place that people went in at 5-6 o'clock. You'd actually see a queue outside the phone box, because people were trying to make arrangements for the following day, where they were going to work, you know, different things, right? And even going to football matches, I remember standing in the village and the guy would go in to ring the other side to see, were they going to be there? Did they have a team? So the mobile
phone... And as many as a love story that came out of them as well.
Yeah, and like the it's just true. But the mobile phone has really taken over. And like, you do need broadband, yes, but you also need mobile connectivity.
And what is it that is that? I mean, good God, they tell us how wonderful they are, all of the mobile providers, and that they have 89 or 95 or 200% coverage of the country. And yet we have these black spots.
So
is it, now I'm going to ask you, hopefully put you on the spot here a wee bit, is it their bad engineering?
No, I started my career in ESAT Digifone as an engineer. So I was responsible for designing the network at the very start. I mean, we had a plan back in 1996-97, and the focus was to cover all of the main roads in Ireland, because that's, at the time, people wanted to have the mobile for when they were on the road moving around and in the main villages or the main towns. As time has gone on and the mobile has become something that everybody uses, and I think I said recently, my mother is a very good example. Like, she sits at home. She's keeping in contact with her family members in Australia, wherever they are in the world, Facebook, but it's all on the mobile phone. So the mobile phone has changed. It's moved the requirement into the home, and it's not just about people moving anymore. And then you take the reason why you have these black spots is that you're talking about very, very small locations now. You're talking about like tiny villages, crossroads in some situations. We're working with the operators to deliver where they've got like their own requirements to improve their network. That's what we do every day.
Who's paying you? Are the operators paying you?
Yeah, so we deliver all the infrastructure. We develop the site, we get the planning, and then the operators pay us then at the end. But what we recognised in the last couple of years, we would have had certain communities, and working with the likes of the Chamber in Laois, they would have come to us at times and said, look, we've got this small business here. they can't get connected. They can't get mobile connectivity. And we've gone and we've tried to do something in that local area. And to be
honest, separate from the Vodafone and the
request,
whoever, yeah.
Separate from the request. And 9 times out of 10, we've actually been able to do something.
Right? Okay, that's good.
And I think what we recognise, working very closely with, as Caroline said, the council in Leash has been particularly good. The broadband officer there.
This is in Leash County Council.
They would have brought locations to us that they would have been getting a lot of complaints. And we went in.
You see, complaining works.
Yeah, it does. And complaining to your to the proper channels like the councils.
But it's not their job.
Well, there's a broadband officer now in the council.
I have to say, I never knew that until this very second. Yeah.
Every single county council has a person that's responsible for mobile broadband issues. So the council would contact us and say, look, is there something happening in this area? We would know generally if there's a planning application, if there's something we're already doing. And if we're not doing it, then we started to look at these areas and saying, well, maybe there is a business case. And but 9 times out of 10, we got the consent, and then we brought those opportunities to the operators, to the mobile operators. And again, we're looking for them to support. So we suddenly realized we're kind of sitting in the middle here. We had the people that are saying that they wanted something done. We were able to do something, and then we just needed the support of the mobile operators to come on board and actually pay for it.
Aha, because there's a cost. It is a cost for Mary on the crossroads or Johnny up in a field somewhere. Is it worth it, and will they pay?
Well, there's no cost for Johnny on the crossroads.
No, but it's presumably a cost to the mobile provider.
Yes, there is a cost to the mobile
provider. Is it expensive?
Well, it's expensive in the sense that, you know, it's easy to make a business case and go in and put in a mobile solution in Nace.
Yeah.
But if you go into a small little village where there's 10, 15 houses.
Yeah.
Well, it's very hard to stack up.
And yet we have to do that for every reason. I mean, we're all citizens of the one state.
Well, the government has a strategy. They announced their digital strategy. It said that they wanted to have 5G for all populated areas by 2030. Now, to
Is that going to happen?
Well, I think it can happen.
Is it going to happen?
I would be a believer that it will happen because I think...
Is that like a believer that Leash is going to win?
Well, I think
Leash choir or something.
I think, well, whatever Leash win, and I'm from Carlow, so I think I'd be certainly hoping for a while. But I think when we look at what we've done in Leash over the last 5-6 years, I think there's certainly a model there that's going to work. And this is why we launched this Get Connected. So we created a website. So we were kind of doing this thing ad hoc, that we were getting requests coming in, we were taking an action. It wasn't really an industrial process, right? So what we decided to do, it was almost like setting up a dating agency. We've launched this Get Connected website, right? Now, by the way, this is not just for rural areas. This can be anywhere.
You just told me before we started this that I should be on that because I've got a problem.
Well, you said you're living in Sandymount, and this is exactly the point. If you have a problem in Sandymount, you should go onto the Get Connected website. You should register your air code, put in your name, your phone number, and what we've done is put in the back end of that a response so somebody will make contact with you. They'll then look at the area, and they'll then go and do a feasibility on what could be done.
Okay. Right?
We may even go further. We may even go to the next stage of saying, actually, there is something here that should be done. And we'll go and get the permit.
And that's getconnected.ie.
Getconnected.ie. And
I'll be on to it just after this.
And it's not just for rural areas. It's for anywhere in Ireland that there's a mobile phone coverage problem. Right? The last point on that is that, like, we can't guarantee that we'll do it. But we will. What our commitment is that we will do something to try and make it happen, and that's, you know, that's as much. But I think Caroline will be able to, you know, to explain the results of that in County Leash.
A perfect segue, because Caroline, what was the problem? How did you did you get on to Cellnex, or was it, how did the process work, and what was the outcome?
Well, I tell you, Laois Chambre, before I even started, you know, we worked a lot with Colin about different issues around the county, because we've businesses and, you know, households that are really, we're really suffering at the time with the
black spots. So your members are coming on to you and going moan, moan, groan, yeah. groan.
I think I was in the role about 2-3 weeks, and I got on to Colin about one member who had horrific broadband, horrific phone coverage. I know I was out there myself. You couldn't have a personal or a business phone call. You're there looking at your phone going, you know, what's going on?
And are we in deep Laois? Are we in the middle of a
not
a
too
valley
far away
or?
From a main town, you know, and even driving down the M50 today to come here, you know, you have black spots along the M50.
There
it's
is
everywhere.
A black spot actually just at Sandyford there. I could never understand it. Everybody knows about it. Nothing has ever happened. Obviously, Cellnex is not on the job.
Well, we do have sites along the M50, but I think there's a difference between so sometimes you might be driving on the M50 and you might drop a call.
I know there's one place up there near Columbus School. Everybody knows. It just goes.
Yeah.
And there's another place up here near another school, which is Mount Anville. And there's no coverage for a bit, 1 second, but it just goes.
It just goes.
Yeah, sorry. Back to Caroline. Tell us about this. So you go out and you find out that there's no coverage. What did you then do?
Well, I have Colin's details to hand. I can pass it on to Colin. Or again, the getconnected.ie website is excellent. Even I have friends who come to me and they're like, I can't even get a signal in my back garden. And straight away I said, look, pop your error code into getconnected.ie. You can look at the case studies. So there's case studies, for example, for Cooldairy, for Vicarstown. And there's three particular solutions in Laois that have been really successful recently. Vicarstown, Castletown and Ballyfin. And Vicarstown have got funding to expand their remote working hub. And Laois actually has a high proportion of remote working hubs for its population. And in fact, every single town in the county has that space. And I think COVID provided people with an opportunity, you know, to work from home. We've adapted the way we've worked. You know, hybrid is still very common. You know, you're coming up to Dublin maybe a couple of days a week, but not full time. And people have started using their remote working hubs because they don't want to be stuck at home. They want that separation. They want that office environment for personal development, to see other people. You don't want to be stuck at home. And I think it's really important to have that mobile connectivity. And I know myself from driving through Ballyfin and Castletown and Vicarstown, there was really bad black spots, and now that's been resolved thanks to Colin. And I think it's very positive to hear, you know, nine out of ten issues are resolved. And again, the collaboration with local businesses. So Delmec is Carlow based, and then we have Alpha Wireless and Jason Redmond and Associates, who are Laois based, involved.
These are local firms that are involved in the solution, are they?
Absolutely. At a local level, countywide level and a national level, which is fantastic.
And the international level, isn't that what you're saying to me, Colin?
Well, they are now, because
I love that.
They're getting an opportunity to bring this onto the European stage with Cellnex.
And are they developing specific solutions that, you know, is their IP?
I would say it's their IP, but we're taking what they have and we're adapting it for the Irish market. But if they have the technology, they have the capability. And I suppose we managed to bring them together. The fact is that Alpha Wireless were based in County Laois. They're an antenna company. And I recognised, like, they were supplying into America, huge, like, all over the world. And I said, but why aren't you doing anything here? And the answer was quite simple. Ireland was very small. For them to put the effort in,
are they a local company?
They're
or
a local Laois based company, yeah. And I couldn't
these
believe
little
it.
Gems.
They're amazing, you know, yeah, even to see their solutions across the world. They're well worth looking up and.
Well, they can come in anytime they want. Well, I love them.
I think they have a really interesting. Like, I've followed them for the last 10 years. And we certainly wanted to try and, you know, utilise the skill set that was here available to us. And it's been massively successful. We couldn't have actually launched the Get Connected program without them, and without, as Caroline has mentioned, you know, Delmec Engineering based in Carlow, and then you have Jason Redman Associates based in Port Laois, and we put them all together. So they're working as a collaborative supply chain into our business, and we're evolving, working together with them. We're evolving that all the time, and you know, there is so much that we can do that works commercially for the operators. And then you're going to have, outside of that, there's going to be areas that are really, really difficult from a business case point of view. And I think that's where we were saying, if there was some level of funding, then we could go further than we are going. So we're if you look at our kind of process today, is we have a requirement for the operators where they say they want to do something. whether that's in a small part in Ace or in Sandymount or whatever. Then we have the Get Connected program, which is a community-driven request. And as I said, we will try and take an action to do something to try and help them. But I think outside of that, there will be areas that then will be difficult from a business case point of view. And that's where, you know, if the government really wants to be serious to get it done, then the process is there, the supply chain is there, the technology is there. And I think we just need that little bit of funding, and it's not a huge amount of money in the context.
Nowadays.
I think it could go a long way to doing it.
And so here's a little thought for you, because I'm a believer in this because of a guy called Professor Martin Curley, is that a lot of our medicine is going to go digital, and you will be sitting at home and you will need to be monitored. And you could be in Leash and you could be in Kerry or Cork or wherever, and you need to be monitored, and therefore you will need that kind of wireless connectivity.
And the likelihood is that that will be on an app on your phone.
Correct.
And that the app will have to have that.
And the apps are there now. Yeah. Yes. And therefore that connectivity will not just feed into, oh, here, where's my daughter in Australia or whatever. It's actually getting in contact with your GP and keeping the health costs down.
I mean, you mentioned the National Broadband Plan. I mean, the National Broadband Plan will bring broadband to the home. But what about the farmer that's in his tractor, you know, when he's out in the field and he has maybe that app on his phone and something happens? I mean, he still needs that mobile connectivity. Yep. And that's the reality of it. So they are two different things. Mobile is you know, it's more widespread than the requirement for the broadband to the home. And, you know, we are affected by the terrain. The terrain makes it difficult. It's not like you can... We get people saying, oh, but you have a tower over there. Why isn't that going to cover this area? But the problem is when you have, you know, terrain like we do have in Ireland, it's hard for the signal to travel sometimes.
It doesn't go through mountains.
It doesn't go through mountains, or it doesn't go down into valleys that well either, you know. And, you know, in the city, you know, you mentioned Sandymount, then the problem you have in the city is you have large buildings. And, you know, where you're living in Sandymount, it could be something that's affecting your area. It could be maybe you're close to the Aviva Stadium that you're shaded by that, or it could be something really, really simple. But I can guarantee you that the local review that we would do, we would be able to pinpoint the requirement at that location to try and fix that problem.
You might tell me the problem is the Aviva. I'll have to get knock it down. I was going to say a sledgehammer. I cannot let you go without asking something. And again, we haven't even got our 5G up and running here, but 6G is coming. And when will we see 6G, and what difference will it make here?
Honestly, I don't know. I've been involved since 97. When it was 2G, right? And okay. We've seen 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G. When I look back over the 20 years, 5G is transformational. There's no question.
Have you got a 5G phone?
I have.
Okay, I haven't.
And I do as well, and it's excellent. Yeah. Like, it's second to none.
What differences have made to you, Carolyn?
It's just in terms of I'm out meeting members, or even, you know, personal level, if I'm sending different emails and things like that, just the speed.
Speed.
I know there's probably more benefits that Colin can go into, but from somebody who's not particularly tech savvy like myself, it's just the speed of everything, even making calls, using your Zoom or whatever on your mobile device. It is transformational.
Yeah, 5G is going to transform the mobile. And, you know, like I've an example where I'm living in Killinard in County Leash. I've recently got a 5G router installed in my house. I'm getting 300-400 megabit download speeds. You know, that I don't know if it's just places even in the city that are getting that in their home. And that's a very simple installation in my house.
And just to remind people, that is wireless.
That's wireless.
Is not the wire coming in the door.
That's wireless.
That's not bad.
It's not bad. We built a site actually in Killinard about 2 years ago, and luckily
because you live there.
Well, because I lived there, but there was a requirement. But I think when I look back over the last 2 years, particularly during 2020, you know, we would have struggled at home had we not been able to connect. The kids were doing a lot of stuff with school, and they were using wireless connectivity over mobile a lot of the time. And I was working from home for a majority of that time as well. And we would have struggled if we hadn't had that. And I think, you know, some of what we're doing right now has come from that? Because we saw during COVID 2020 in particular, a lot of communities on papers, on the newspaper. We actually saw a community down in Kilkenny that, you know, they had these community columns. And one of the things that they were complaining about was the mobile coverage in the village. And we spotted that and we rang them. And we said, hey, what's going on? And then we went down to meet them. They supported the planning application. We got the planning, and then the tower, we now have the tower built, and I think there's two of the mobile operators on that tower today. They're delighted.
And that is, it is tower-driven, is it? So to get your solution, you have to have a tower somewhere, yeah?
Well, yeah. So this is interesting, because the tower is traditionally what we did. Caroline mentioned recently, she saw the solution we deployed down in Strabally in County Leash. It's a fake tree. It's a 36-metre fake tree down in Strabally Hall. I don't know if you know, the electric picnic is on there this weekend, and that'll be providing the connectivity to all of the people down there. But it fits in really well with the environment. It's a fairly protected area in terms of the town itself. But the solution that we've come up with Alpha Wireless is a very slimline pole. The antenna is built in, so it actually really fits into the streetscape, right? We recently deployed a solution in Dublin on O'Connell Bridge, which is a big belly bin type solution. So we created the big belly bin with a pole and an antenna. Now, I guarantee you, if you walked past it 100 times, you would never even notice it. So we're trying
that's
to...
That's a 5G...
Well, it's a mobile, so it's antenna. A mobile site with 4G, 5G on it.
Okay.
But the idea is that we're trying to design the solution that fits in with the landscape. Because if you go into a rural small village, like, you don't need a 36 metre tower, especially if you're only trying to cover 10 or 15 houses. So that's where we've worked this collaboration with these companies that we're working with, is to come up with this type of solution now that's not as evasive as a tower.
Who pays
for it? Well, we obviously pay, we make all the investments. So we put up the upfront investment, we pay for all of the materials, and then at the end, then we charge the operator to use the infrastructure.
Okay. So it's kind of circular.
It's a funny one, actually, because sometimes when we've gone into communities, the first question is, they ask us, is how much is this going to cost us?
Yeah.
We said, no, it's not going to cost you anything, because...
Oh, we love that.
You know, but there is this perception that because they are so rural, or there's, you know, these are areas that are never going to be covered, that they should actually fund some of it.
Yeah.
And that's, I sometimes am quite amused by that, because, you know, I've never seen a situation in Ireland where somebody has paid to improve their mobile phone coverage in a village or whatever, right? But it does come up. It does.
That's good news. And that is very positive. Come here to me. Before we let you go, we always have a final question. So, Caroline, I'm going to ask you first, who would Caroline Hoffman hire in a heartbeat?
It would probably be Michelle Obama. I think she's achieved a lot. She's, you know, broken the glass ceiling. She was, you know, one of the top people in her law firm at the time. And I just think she's an exceptional person and very committed to everything she does.
You could have a Michelle Obama Plaza down in Leash, couldn't you?
Yes, there is one in neighbouring county.
We have the Barack one, but we have the Michelle one as well.
Exactly. So, they're welcome to come visit Leash anytime.
Well, she is obviously a very, very impressive woman. So, yeah, she's not a bad choice. And same question to you, Colin Cunningham.
Well, if I thought he was available, I'd certainly hire Michael O'Leary. He's been a... For me, anyway, when I started my first company back in 1999-2000 and Ryanair were starting off, he was a big, big help to us.
It's unbelievable that it's Ryanair, Europe's anyway, but maybe one of the world's biggest low-cost operators now, only started back then.
Yeah, and we were starting a business where we had people travelling from Ireland to the UK on a weekly basis. And, you know, if I look back over that period of time, it was probably the biggest contributing factor to our success. And we used to get questioned all the time by our customers in the UK as to how could you be affording to fly all these guys over and back from Ireland? And they thought that we were charging them too much money. And when we looked at it, there was no way that we could even base ourselves in London, because the cost of train travel internally in the UK was much, much higher than flying from Dublin to Manchester or Dublin to Leeds. But I've followed Michael O'Leary over the last number of years, and I just like his approach, his style, the way he's, you know, tried to grow his business.
Two things came together around that time. One was Jack Charlton and the other one was Ryanair. And it really did change, I believe, when the history books are being written. That'll be part of the history of the country as to how we got out of being just a little island on the edge of Europe.
Could be another story for, what was it called, The Pope's Children?
David McWilliams' book, yeah.
Book, yeah.
Certainly is. Listen, Colin Cunningham, CEO, Cellnex, and Caroline Hoffman. Hoffman, H-O-F-M-A-N. Where did I have to ask
you? It's an unusual surname.
It certainly isn't leash-based. Where did that come from?
It's quite a long story, but Tipperary is my home. There's quite a backstory to it. I don't think we've quite enough time.
But is it German or?
Dutch.
Dutch, okay. Yeah. Well, we'll take you wherever you come from. And Leash will take you, obviously, wherever you come from. Caroline Hoffman, who is also the CEO of Leash Chamber of Commerce. Thank you both for joining us on That Great Business Show. And that's it from That Great Business Show, episode 105. As always, I chide, bully, and encourage you to share this and other episodes. Sharing, not liking, sharing is what LinkedIn loves. You share, LinkedIn knows you are a good person and elevates you to a LinkedIn god or goddess. It takes just the same effort to push that share button as the like button, but sharing sends it to all of your hundreds or thousands of followers. Those followers will also love, love, love you for sending them this Irish Podcast Awards Best Business Podcast nominated episode. Now, here's a big question for your business. Why isn't your business advertising with us? Big Red Cloud does, as have Microfinance Ireland, Virgin Media, and Udaros na Gaeltachta. No other channel can deliver a truly engaged business audience at our incredible value for money prices. And we record here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where our sound engineer, Mark McCarthy, and studio manager, Peter Rice, create the sound that helped us win that Best Business Podcast nomination. If you want to record a podcast, use the team here at the Dublin South Podcast Studios. I do. And if you'd like the media group to produce a podcast for your business, then talk to me, Conal O'Moran. Find me on LinkedIn. All of our great business insights and tips are brought to you, as always, thanks to our sponsor, De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best all-natural shaving oil. They back us. Please back them. DeFactoShave.com will get them. And also don't forget to buy Business Plus magazine, where we now have a regular column all about the podcast. So for me, Conal O'Moran, mira buachas for listening, agus slán tamhle.